Hello, and welcome to the Nattercast for Breaking Bad, episode 502, titled Madrigal. I am Jason Shankle of Shankle Studios, and I am not joined this week by my lovely wife, Sione, who is on assignment, as they say, being producerly and putting our movie together. But I do have our returning special guest co-host, Andrew Littlefield.
Hello.
Hello, Andrew. And we'll be possibly joined soon by Patrick Van Wy, who you may remember from our Game of Thrones casts. He'll be coming in, hopefully, to bat cleanup for us in the bottom half of the hour here. So I guess we're just going to get kind of straight into Madrigal. Overall impressions. Let's start with overall impressions.
Overall impressions, another very strong episode. Again, it seems like because they only have a few episodes left, they're just moving everything ahead quickly.
Yeah.
So there's no real fat, you know.
It's just very lean, very lean episode.
Like, boom, something.
Everything's firing on us. Yeah, this is not Bug. They're not chasing a fly. There's no more fly
right,
chasing episodes
no fly,
coming,
which I enjoyed, but still, yeah, definitely not that. It's very like big stuff happens. So, you know, especially
and big
with Mike.
Backstory and Mike and everything.
Right.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it better than last week. I thought last week's was good. It was a good solid start. What I liked about last week was that it wasn't box cutter. You know, it wasn't, right. You know, it's like it was the day after cleanup details, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, the pacing and the elements of the story, it had some high moments, but nothing this intense, you know. And this one I felt like once it became clear that this was about Mike, we're going to be following Mike, you had me. I'm just, oh, Mike. I can watch Jonathan Banks. I can just watch him all day.
Yeah. You know? What I like about Jonathan Banks is he's a kind of, and this is that kind of character. He's a kind of character who doesn't say a lot. He does a lot of acting with his eyes and
his face
and his general expression.
Oh, I think we have our second co-host. We just started. Come on in, sit down.
Oh,
hey.
You're just in time. Sit at the head here. We have Patrick Van Wy joining us, fresh from the Bay Area Rapid Transit System.
And playing golf all day.
Oh, yeah.
Playing golf? Wow.
Yeah. Okay, hold on. Get a little closer there because you're going to have the weaker mic. So.
All right. How's that?
Cool. So you've been playing golf all day.
Yep. That was my day today.
Okay, cool. Well, we have golf movies coming up, so we need you to be good with golf.
Good.
So we just started. We were just giving our overall impressions of this episode.
From what I read on the Facebook page, I have a slight different take on
that. Well,
this
that's
episode.
Good. That's why we do these casts. Oh, yeah. Hold on a second. I got a monitor to give you.
Perfect.
There you go. Perfect. Let's hear your blasphemous heretical take.
Well, I'm of the opinion that this episode is much like Star Wars Episode 2 or 007 Quantum of Solace.
Where this is Quantum of Clones?
Quantum.
Something like that. Where it's a vehicle to get to a point where...
Yeah, wow. I don't think I can argue with that.
Yeah, it's not a particularly stellar episode. Like, I've seen a lot better Breaking Bad.
Okay, well, we'll get into the breakdown. I think there's a lot to recommend this episode. Yeah. But you didn't think, even as a vehicle episode, that filling out the backstory on Madrigal and Mike, even to the degree that we got. I mean, there's a lot. It's not like a bunch of new stuff happened. We got a lot of old stuff answered. We learned who Madrigal was.
We knew who they were. They were a big German.
But we didn't know they were a food company.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we did. We knew that they owned Los Pollos Hermanos.
Do we know they owned them? I thought that we just knew that they supplied them with electrical equipment. But anyway, the point is we didn't know that, you know, we didn't know that there was this Lydia person. We didn't know what the connection was, you know, that there was a contact person.
We didn't know how deep they were involved.
We didn't know anything about Mike. We didn't know that, you know, what anything
about
Mike's
backstory.
And we'll
be talking about Deus Ex Machina later.
Yeah. But, okay. So, all right. So let's just get, I guess, into the recap then. And we'll go through and make our debating points at that time. Okay. So we open up with the sauce testing,
which right? was
for the dipping sauces. For turns out, I listened to the Insider Cast. Those are tater tots. Now I thought they were chicken nuggets.
Yeah, first time.
Looking, do they look like chicken?
Right?
Yeah, I thought they were chicken nuggets.
Yeah,
but
sure.
according to the Villigan, they are.
Who makes dipping really sauces matter. For tater tots?
Exactly. That's why I thought it was chicken because
Germans.
Who dip? It's Germans. But the Germans wouldn't
ketchup.
Call it. They wouldn't call it French and Cajun kickass. This is clearly for an American audience.
Yes, that was funny.
Well, but they're making sauces for an American audience.
So we have one. one of our firsts for the season here. We have the first upshot through a transparent surface that represents an opaque surface, which we get every season on Breaking Bad, right? The first one was up through the floor when they were mopping up bodies, you know, and like every season there's a wipe, you know, or something. Yeah. And this time it was a dip.
Right.
It was nice. And I was listening to the Insider cast today, and Kelly Dixon and Vince Gilligan and McLaren were there. Oh, by the way, episode directed by Michelle McLaren, who is like the top Breaking Bad director. She just really knows her stuff. Mm. So they said they had all the sauces pretty well done. They're kind of all based on icing. And they all read okay, except the French. The French just didn't read well, but it was okay because it was a distant shot. But they needed a close-up, and the close-up was going to look terrible, right? So they said, well, for the close-up, they needed to doctor it to make it look good. And it, so it's basically it's frosting with paint on it, just like some kind of paint. And for the dip, right? And they were worried that he was going to have to eat the painted stuff.
Make sure it's unleaded.
Gilligan said, hey, man, everything's edible for a few seconds.
Right. Dip and then you just to
spit
it
out, you'll be fine. So that's, you know, the French is all painted. And my feeling is that, you know, flooding our streets with deadly drugs is one thing, but if these people are responsible for fast food dipping sauces, these monsters must be stopped.
There you go.
And so then we have our guy, Mr. Shula, Herr Shula. He learns that the police are coming after him, and he first of all, is it just me, or in the dipping sauce scene when he gets notified of this, does it seem like the Germans, like, I bring their film expressionism with them? Because we had like the split face shot with his secretary and all these reflective surfaces. It's like something out of like Fritz Lang or Robert Wine. You know, it's like I kept expecting like Nosferatu to be around
that
the corner.
Would be kinda awesome.
Mr. Nosferatu's here. And then he's walking down all of their and you see all the other
fast food places
that they're all invested in.
And
the last bit I have before I'll let you guys, you know, give your thing, was one more bit from the Insider cast, is that one of the restaurants that we didn't get to see was called Luftwaffel. So those are all my intro jokes for that.
That is funny.
So what do you guys think of the Madrigal bed? Do you have like it was
a fun way to start it.
Yeah,
I mean, you know it's a fast food chain, so why not have them tasting dipping sauces just before the police come? I mean, it's so ridiculous.
I really like the organization of Madrigal, where it's like everything is very ein zwei, we make corporation, you know. And now you can hear me.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just people who are late do not get fruit cup, and they also get the bummy mic.
Yay!
Also, your voice carries very well, so that mic will pick you up better. We poor old people need these giant fucking boom radar mics, young man.
Why, thank you.
Speaking of which, yeah, we got the Walter White Batman voice mod. We need to cook again. I'm broke. I had to spend $300,000 on a bat cave. Those things are expensive. Well, then also, how about the art direction on the bathroom where he goes to kill himself with the defibrillator? By the way, kids, don't try it at home. You can't kill yourself with a defibrillator. They have
Yay, science.
Well, yay, engineering. They have safeties. They make sure that you're using them correctly, you know, which means that you can't take the pad off. You can't put it in your mouth. It has to be on your chest. You know,
well, like maybe that. In Germany you can.
Yeah,
or maybe he rigged up a special suicide box just for himself.
Yeah, you never know. He could have been planning for this.
But how about that, like the red toilet and the red sink?
I like the toilet flushing as he dies.
Yeah, it looked like he killed himself in Stanley Kubrick's bathroom.
Yeah, kinda. Yeah, very clinical and cold.
Very clinical and cold. Okay, so then we come back to America.
America, yeah.
And here's another scene that I got. This is like that I liked was. You have the rolling sound of Jesse and Walt trying to assuage him about the rice and cigarette.
Right.
You know, and Walter's like making a salt cigarette to do the swab, but he's got the rice in one. He keeps the rice in.
and then flushes it.
Well, why? This might come in handy, I guess, at some point.
You never want to give up a bullet if you don't have to.
Well, he doesn't want Jesse to.
Except
really
it's evidence.
Yeah, it's evidence.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure at this point, if Walt gets caught, a little bit of ricin isn't really going to make too much of a difference on his sentence.
It's a chemical weapon.
Because he's not going away for life.
That's true. Well, he's going to get, yeah, well,
That's a best case scenario for him.
I guess. Yeah. I don't know. It's more of along the lines of like what scenario does Walter? I'm more asking a question like, what does Walter think he's going to need ricin for? Is it just a rainy day kind of thing? Does he think that there's an emergency ricin situation that's going to come up? Because before he always needed it to kill somebody further up the pyramid from him. Yeah. You know, now he's at the top of the pyramid.
Well, yeah, but that's kind of what the whole season is about, is that now that Walt's on top, the season's about what you have to do to stay there.
Yep. Yeah.
So
it's about power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, with Walt, he doesn't know who is going to be, you know, the next person. He doesn't know the person who's going to challenge him.
Right.
Because, I mean, at this point, there's three people I have in my rundown for the end of the second half. You know, the end of the
series. The end of the first half.
Just the end of the series.
In the series. Between now and the end
of
the series.
Like, who Walt is going to face. It's either going to be Pinkman, Skyler, or Hank.
I think it's going to be all three. And Mike. The four bouts that I see coming are Pinkman, Skyler, Mike, and Hank. And we're setting Mike up right now.
Yeah. Mike can't stand him. So,
well, yeah, but I mean,
that has to work.
But he's kind of turned Mike into an ally from being an enemy.
I don't know. No,
no, no, no, not well,
very reluctant ally.
Yeah, yeah. But
if Gus was an ally as well.
Yeah, but he's got a Mike is in a position where he has to tie his fortunes to Walt.
He needs Mike needs Walt to cook for him, and so that Mike can. We'll get into this further in the cast, but so Mike needs the money. That's why he's doing
it.
Yeah.
I think because he's doing it for the money, it's going to lead to a confrontation.
Well, I think it will, but I think Mike is the one who's going to get away.
Oh yeah, I think Mike's going to get away. No, Mike's going to lose the confrontation one way or another. He's either going to back away or get killed or whatever, because I think he's the first up on bat and. Heisenberg has to go after Heisenberg, and Hank has to happen. That fight has to happen.
Well,
so Mike either has to get out of the way or be part of that fight.
I think it might end up a little bit differently.
Yeah.
I think Mike is kind of the trickster,
right?
For those who have read the writer's journey,
yes,
yeah, where he kind of he switches from side to side. He does what he needs to. He's a survivor. He kind of he's the one who fools everybody,
right?
Which is why I think he's going to be the one who gets away ultimately. He'll go off into the sunset with his granddaughter or something.
Yeah,
I think he might get away clean.
That might be one way to end the show. Yeah,
but I count that as losing the fight, quote unquote, in literary sense. He will be the one who walks away, and Walter will still be standing.
Exactly. Yeah. I think he's going to leave Walter there to take the bullet.
He also could just die of old age.
He could.
Get a heart attack.
He's been shot.
Yeah. But I think.
Old people don't heal.
I think Hank is going to be more, to use a sports analogy, which I know you hate.
I just don't relate to him. They're unpersuasive to me.
Well, yeah. I think because Hank is the police, and the police are kind of, they're closing their teeth on Walt, like they're surrounding him a little bit.
Yeah.
He's kind of like the game clock. He's more just the engine for action.
He is a ticking clock of a sort.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And it's kind of like once Hank figures it out,
everybody knows that Hank is a burning fuse. And it's gotten to the point. I said like last week that we're kind of like in season one Skyler territory with Hank, where it's like it's not plausible that he's not going to get to Walter.
Yeah.
Soon at this point, there's just too much pointing right at Walt.
But Hank,
not anymore.
Hank finally got a clue.
He had a great scene.
In this episode, he finally got a clue.
He Columbo'd this guy wonderfully and everything. Okay, we'll move on because we got a lot of stuff to talk about in the coverage there. So the other element of this that I have in my notes here is how in the rice, we have the rice and search, right? And again, from the insider cast, Kelly Dixon is the editor. She said that she did some interesting stuff with the cuts. Lots of forward and reverse time. Lots of jumping across different takes of the same material that are discontinuous. So you'll see people searching and then a jump and you'll see them searching and the stuff has moved, and she just said she was just playing around with all this little different.
And you can get away with that in a scene like that.
Well, it's a montage. So it's got hyper reality and irreality to it.
We know what's going on.
And
the funny thing is, of course, Walt's just bluffing the whole time.
Yeah. So this is the thing I had on Justified. They said an alcoholic will steal your wallet. A junkie will steal your wallet and help you look for it. And evidently that applies to rice and cigarettes as well.
Well, here's my question that I probably missed it, but how did he get the rice and cigarette into the Roomba?
In the montage. He had enough time in the montage to do it.
They didn't show it. We see him putting the rice and cigarette
in some kind of plug and then plugging it to the
wall. Keeping the actual rice in.
Oh.
But the one that he filled with salt.
Yeah, that is done a little strangely because of the audio. The audio kind of throws you on that because we move from Walter's house to Jesse's house without without changing audio. So you're like, is he doing this in Jesse's place? Is he hiding it? Why would Jesse have dropped it behind an outlet? No, that's what I thought too the first time. No, what he's doing is he's keeping the ricin for himself. He destroyed the original ricin cigarette. He made a replacement. He made sure that he put it in a place where Jesse would find it at the same time he found it so he could get it out of his hands quickly. Yeah. So he's not looking at the salt and seeing that salt. Yeah.
And the Roomba finally has
the Roomba, and as we paid off the Roomba, Roomba set up a payoff. We also here's another first for our season. This is our first jump cut montage with musical montage with Walter and Jesse. We get one of those every season as well. It's usually
that's good.
Yeah. So listening to it was also. I mean, Aaron Paul. I think he was going for the Emmy. You know, with his like, oh, Mr. White, I'm so sorry, I tried to kill you.
Well, it was pretty. It was surprising because you didn't think he would do that.
I do because he does. Jesse become, to me is like the moral heart of the show.
Yeah, even though he's a meth dealer.
Well, no, moral in the sense that he's not that he does moral things all the time. Moral in the sense that he feels moral consequences.
Yeah,
right? So he's a murderer and a drug dealer and all this other stuff.
Right,
but he feels bad about it.
But he feels bad about it. I mean, but feeling bad about it is an important thing to make someone relatable.
And that was I like the way that that not just him but also Bryan Cranston played that like. Oh, it's okay.
Yeah, how about the creepy pizza boy massage? I thought it was going to get into some slash fiction.
No, he's just like, oh, it's okay.
We'll have to tell Kira to watch the show then.
Oh, yeah, right. One of our directors.
I really did poison a child, but you don't know that.
Yeah, it's okay. We were working together. I've got your back. Oh, you're very tense. Let me get the hot oil. That pizza looks really good, you know. And I thought that was creepy. So this is where Michelle McLaren and Kelly Dixon as the editor really made this whole script work, which is that you see him giving him the man massage, and that's creepy enough. And then you get the Skylar massage at the end.
Yes,
he's trying to massage with kisses and stuff, and it was just so gross.
There was it was interesting in the. The first Skylar scene and the man massage scene.
Yes.
Did you guys notice what they did with Walt?
They put him in the dark.
Well, but they cut off his head.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
In both of them, they cut off his head? Yeah, in both of them, they cut off his head. So it's kind of like he's totally like disassociated from...
He's the headless horseman.
Well, but he's disconnected from what's actually happening. Like He's kind of like he's going through the motions. Like he's there, but he's...
But he's
not
really
just, there.
He's trying to manipulate them.
Yeah.
He's trying to be manipulative and he's just slimy.
Yeah. And he's it's not Walt anymore. He's just a body.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's just this
I thought that was like brilliant editing and just shot choice.
The way that they editing and framing and directing the acting, the way that they have been portraying in both of these episodes, the way they've been portraying especially Walter, his physical performance. It's very compelling. I mean, it's very nuanced because, again, I think they're taking him on this arc where we're supposed to really hate him by the end.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm kind of ahead of him, ahead of that mark a little bit at this point. So they've had to very much change his physical performance. Like I was watching we've been watching a few of the earlier episodes and Aaron Paul as well. It's like the Jesse of what is supposed to be 11 months ago is nothing like this guy. It's like he's really altered to become this very different. He's become, I think, the proto Mike. Jesse feels a lot like Mike minus 40 years, to me.
He's gone through a lot of changes in the past few months. He's had
he's
gone through rehab. He had a girlfriend overdose.
He's gone through half of his 30s.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't help but notice 11 months ago you were 24. Now you seem to be 32.
Well,
it's like, oh, meth is a hell of a drug, man.
Meth ages you.
You know Wendy? She's 19. Cut that one out of Facebook. So basically at this point, just from that scene, I've been here for a while, but I'm Team Jesse at this point. I want him to be the guy. him and Mike. I want them to be the ones who get away and into the sunset and get a girl. And
I have a very strong suspicion you are going to be satisfied.
Maybe. I think he's going to give us Jesse.
Yeah. I think Jesse will not have a bad fate. I think he will. So at the
either
end,
that or they will take everything from him so cruelly that we and it'll be Walter's fault. Either they're setting him up to be a huge victim or a big winner.
Yeah, I'll go.
Or he can get a justified punishment.
Yeah.
He could go to jail.
Right now, he's the only stake I have in the show in terms of more of like I care, and Mike too a little bit, but Mike is a minor character. But it's like I care about what happens to Jesse. The rest of them, I care in the sense that I'm interested. It's very good, and I want them to explode horribly. I'm not rooting for anybody.
Skyler's a bad person. I don't think
I'm also not rooting for Skyler. I'm not like
Skyler's not a saint.
The interesting thing
he's a money launderer.
Yeah. We like Hank and we like Jesse, and they're in
opposition
to each other.
And the one pummeled the other.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
let's not forget that Hank has a violent temper. That was police abuse.
Yes, it was.
Yeah,
it was
I don't think he'd be too good at it anymore, though.
It's been 6 whole months. But he's got his limp and everything. By the way, he's recovered his walking pretty quickly.
Well, it's okay.
Okay. So anyway, so there's a moral center of the show, and as you know, there's also that Walter. I think this is going to be how his downfall comes down. The form it comes down is his megalomania, right? We all know that he's got this problem. But one of the things about megalomania is that you have no ability to comprehend that other people have a different point of view than you do. Right. And so he's had no idea that like setting Jesse up to, his plan was that either Jesse was going to blame Gus initially or Jesse was going to come to him and he was going to point him to Gus.
Right.
So one way or another, he has Jesse blaming somebody who innocent who didn't poison Brock and finding out about it. And he has no plan in mind for Jesse finding out that he killed somebody who was innocent of the crime that he was killing him for. Certainly Gus wasn't innocent or anything else. Or that he was going to kill Walter White. It doesn't occur to Walter that Jesse would feel guilt about that kind of thing. Right? It doesn't occur to him that Skyler's not going to buy his "I blew up a nursing home" story and just roll with it.
Right.
And I think that's where Mike is going to have the edge on him, because Mike seems to understand people a little better.
Yeah.
So it occurs to him how other people think. You know?
Sure.
Anything else on that? Or?
What's the next scene?
So moving on, yes. let's see here. Moving on. So then, the last one thing I wanted to say was Jesse in the light, with the light along his chin and the rest of his head in the dark, when he says, "Forward to what?" You know, that was pretty German expressionism. So we have Mike at home enjoying a beer and an Ensure.
And watching the Caine Mutiny, which is a good movie, but it is a movie about a megalomaniac.
It's a movie about a megalomaniac
who leads his crew completely the wrong way.
The kind of guy who would shut down a multi-million-dollar operation to search for a fly that is not likely to contaminate anything at all, and B, even if it contaminates it as fully as it possibly could, would not significantly reduce the quality of the product.
Right.
Right. There is no reason to kill this fly.
As Jesse pointed out, they're selling to meth heads.
They're selling to meth heads.
And it's 99%,
0.9% pure. It's like ivory soap.
Yeah. It's crazy.
So that's... I actually thought, when I was watching Bug, I was thinking of the Caine Mutiny. I was like, this is a Caine Mutiny kind of crazy thing. Where... Yeah. Have you seen... Patrick, have you seen the Caine Mutiny?
No.
This is your movie. Okay, so we're going to do movie of the week.
Oh, now it's Caine Mutiny?
Caine Mutiny. We're doing Caine Mutiny.
Pretty solid film.
During Game of Thrones, we periodically would do a movie of the week to talk about in the following week. Yeah. So we're all going to watch Caine Mutiny.
As every week.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Did we do every week? I thought it was most weeks.
I've seen Caine Mutiny a couple times.
I don't want to necessarily write it every week, but if an opportunity shows up, the two movies of the week I think we need to do are Caine Mutiny and Titus. What's her name? I had the name here, but the actress who plays Lydia played Lavinia in Titus.
Uh-huh.
But for this week, okay, Caine Mutiny. So, I have this principle that says it's never a good sign when House of the Rising Sun starts playing in a movie. That's never good. And it's never good to watch the Caine Mutiny before entering into a business contract with someone.
Yeah.
And the last thing I had was, I sent this one to Bald Move. I hope they play it. It says, you can go all the way back to Thespis of Icaria, and you will never find an actor who can more perfectly capture the annoyance of having your afternoon movie interrupted as Jonathan Banks can. Just like...
Yes. Well, like I was saying before, I think Jonathan Banks is great. He won't say a lot, but you can know what he's thinking. You know, you already know he's going to say no to Walter.
Yeah, his eyes.
Just by his expressions, yeah. Like, oh, come on. I'm not working with this guy anymore. You know,
that you're a time great. Bomb.
Yes.
Tick, tick, ticking away.
He's right.
And he's right, but he goes back to work for him.
But yeah. He's got no choice. His back is to the wall.
Yeah, and well, no, how great is this? So his back is to the wall. We'll get into this when we get to the Hank and Gomi thing. Only because of the magnet gag.
Right.
If they had not done the magnet gag, they would be free and clear.
They would not have found the...
They wouldn't have found the bank thing. And
who knows, the computer was encrypted, so maybe they couldn't...
And he would have had time. I mean, he would have had time to get his people to move all that money and get it safely tucked away.
Right.
You know, and, you know... So there you
chain
are.
Chain of events.
Okay, so then we have Madrigal, Electromotive, visiting Albuquerque DEA. And Hank is like, how many krauts do we have? Oh, all of them, I think. You know.
Enough to invade Poland.
Enough to invade Poland.
That was pretty funny.
Wait a second here. Yeah, so then they have that great shot on the table. You right. see that one with the and that's like a crane jib head thing that they did to do this tracking shot down the table. And they asked Villigan, who's not on set, so he asked the director how she got that shot. And she said, oh, you know, then she said, like, oh, it's a Luftwaffe crane with a Hufenbottle head. You know, he said, it's fine German engineering. And it's like, it's true. They had all German hardware taking the shot of the Germans. And we get our first shot at Lydia. And I think I'm just going to skip over to the Mike and Lydia bit, unless anybody has anything on the boardroom meeting. It seemed like a pretty perfunctory segment.
No, I mean, the only thing of significance is, you know, we're going to help you. And
it's, you know, it's
an innocent person doesn't kill themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
I'm sure he was involved in the financing of this stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so then we have Mike and Lydia at the diner.
That was good.
Oh my god.
I like that scene a lot.
You have something.
Oh my god, Dwayne.
Dwayne, yes.
Yeah, that was the worst
undercover
operation. Would you like anything else, Mike?
You want anything else, Mike?
That was hysterical.
Thing is, this happens all the time with Mike.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like, come on, I know this place. And I love her tea order. You know, it's like, yeah. Do you have jasmine or rosemary? And it's like, we got lemon.
We got lips.
We got
bring
white
me hot wine. Filtered water and lemon.
You know, right then and there, Mike should have just shot her.
Yeah, she's the one to shoot. She's the wild card.
Yeah. Well, seriously, she is the one who is going to turn.
She's the problem. She is not the, except for the other 11 are going to turn now because the money's gone.
Well, no. But when she came up with, like, oh, here's a list of 11 people, and, you know, Mike is just like, these are good guys. These are good guys. You know,
well, they're
like,
also paid off. That's his thing. They're paid
off.
Yeah. And now they're not paid off.
Well, right. Yeah, but it's like it's gone. Because of Lydia that they all start going crazy because
right, she starts hiring them to kill each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Which,
yeah.
By the way, is like that's like working for the Joker.
Yeah,
you know, it's like you have 11 teammates. I want you to kill 3 of them. I promise, I'm not hiring anyone to kill you. I would never do that. You know, that was some heavy Heath Ledger.
Well, it was nice in that it was like. Passive aggressive. She says, I have a list here of 11 names. These men could all sink us. And he's like, what are you saying? He says, well, we could get in trouble from these guys. You know, yeah. She's not saying, go kill them.
You want me to kill every man on this piece?
It's like,
she's like, well, that might work.
Like, well, that would solve the problem, but I'm not asking you to do it.
Yeah. I'm not like, saying you should kill them, but that would fix everything.
But if you, you know, wanted to.
Yeah.
Just.
You know, if they were all about to hit an accident, you don't have to save them.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, I got two callbacks on this, though. So there's the first callback is he says, you know, I don't know what kind of movies you've been watching, but we don't kill 11 people for prophylactic reasons.
Yeah.
And that reminded me of the bit at the end of season, I think it's the bridge between seasons one and two, where Jesse says, this is like, when they're meeting in the junkyard, he says, this is like a non-criminal's idea of where criminals meet. And he's like, well, where would you suggest? At the mall? He's like, yeah, the mall, or Taco Cabeza. No one ever gets shot at Taco Cabeza. And this was like the no one gets shot at Taco Cabeza moment for Mike. Yeah. He's like, we don't start killing people in a situation like this because that killing focuses people
more
on
attention.
You, more attention on you. Okay, the second thing I got is, so that's the first callback was Mike, you know, sort of calling back to the Taco Cabeza line that Jesse had. The other one is, we were going to watch it earlier, was Half Measures and Full Measure, the two episodes that bridge season three and four. That Banks gave that great speech. That was the first moment for him on the show where I was like, oh my God, they're really using Jonathan Banks. Where he tells Walter, don't take any half measures in life. Don't, you know, and he describes what this backstory he had where he let a wife beater go and the guy ends up killing his wife. Right? And he's like, I should just kill him. Okay. maybe there are other answers.
Yeah.
But if you're going to do something, do it.
If you're going to do something, do it. Right. That's what he's going to say. He says, I should have like either done something or not. And it seems to me that Mike in this is now, I know his hand is being pressed by what happens with the DEA and everything, but he's knee deep in half measures. He's got hysterical women. He's got loose cannons. He doesn't trust Jesse's judgment.
He's got a time bomb.
He's got a time bomb. He's got to deal with Saul. I mean, this is Mike's nightmare retirement. he didn't have this in mind. He had a couple million bucks and then watching his granddaughter grow up.
Right.
In his mind, you know. And it seems like, one of the great writing tricks is you always have a character say the opposite of what they end up doing, right? Mm. You see that all the time, you know. Christopher Nolan loves that one. Don't do this and don't do that and don't do that and watch me go do these things. And so that's what we're seeing here out of Mike is that's one of the, like, the little superhero things that you do is you say not to do something, then you go do it. Mm. What'd you think of her performance, though?
No, she was good.
Interesting character. Interesting, like, characterization.
Yeah, well,
it's very
this sort of
archetype.
She's such an odd character to be involved in drugs, but that's, you know, and something illegal.
Which she's one part.
Yeah,
we don't know how she broke bad. She could have started off in food.
Right. She probably just wanted money. I mean, she obviously lives in a beautiful house. We don't know if she's married. She has a daughter.
Shuler probably hired her.
Yeah.
I would say.
Probably something like...
Shuler was hired in 93.
She's probably like an accountant who was asked to launder money.
Well, no. I mean, she supplies them with the... What is it? Meth?
No, she's a supplier. Right. She's a supplier.
Yeah, no, she gets them the difficult chemicals to get.
Yeah.
The money... they don't have to launder money. They sell things legitimately.
But, oh, that's right.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, everything's above board in terms of... They don't have gobs of cash coming in that she would know about.
Yeah.
The question is, who's getting the gobs of cash? There's no way Madrigal can be receiving millions and millions of dollars and laundering it without a huge, much bigger operation than just two people, you know.
Well, my thought was that it was the 11 people on the, you know, the 11 people on the list plus Lydia get them all the, you know, they do the piecemealing.
Right, but the 11 people, the Mike's guys are all operations. They're not going to be launderers. Right, so they pick up money, they do security, they handle deliveries, but they're not laundering the cash because Gus is providing a product, not cash. Mm-hmm. Right, he's being given cash to pay people with. He's not making it himself. Yeah. Right, so it's not clear that Mike wouldn't be the guy to go to for a money laundering operation anyway. He's more of a he's more of a stolen object kind of guy. Let's see. So I think what we're going to have here is we find out in a bit from the DEA that Mike is in financial trouble here, which could lead to prison time kind of trouble. So I think we're going to start seeing bad decision Mike start to come out.
Mike Stark.
Mike Stark. We're going to start seeing a Mike Stark thing. And the first bad decision is going into business with Pinkman and the Brain.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's just a bad choice. You know, how difficult could it possibly be to rob banks?
He's right. He has a time bomb.
Yeah, it's a time bomb. You know, and
we know that because we see him buying a big old machine gun in the first episode. So
maybe it's just a birthday present.
That, now there would be a twist last episode.
Well, I know he could have joined the, you know, the tea party or something. You
yeah,
know,
there you go.
What yeah. Walt ends
he's having
up
a birthday celebration for himself. Yeah. Well, we're gonna evidently we're gonna be getting a birthday episode. This, you know, in like
51.
I think the next two is called 51. And I got to believe, given the complete like sliminess of the situation, that this is going to be quite the birthday party. Quite the little cotillion. He's going to have to, because they have to keep up appearances.
Yeah.
Right? So he's going to have the Schraders over. Hank is close. He's like a nickel away from figuring this thing out. Walt is.
No, he's not that close. He just got his first clue that it's Walt.
That's a nickel away. At this point, he's been on it for a year. He's got Los Pollos Hermanos, you know.
But Walt's the guy who's been helping him get there. It wouldn't be Walt.
I guess. I don't know. I think.
Yeah, I don't think he thinks Walt is in.
Here's my prediction is that we're going to see a significant advancement of Heisenberg versus Schrader.
Yeah, eventually, yeah.
On Walter's birthday episode, which is coming up. Okay. I think there will be. I don't think it's going to be the shootout or anything. I think that that's when stuff is going to start getting revealed. And I think it's going to be alcohol related.
Oh, it's always alcohol related.
Because well, he had his drink before and he blew the line and got Hank back on the track. Right?
Yeah. Yep.
And
yep.
So I think we're going to see, because I'll tell you why. Because in this episode, we had this whole thing where the main DEA guy is taking the hit for Gus Fring. Right. And he's saying, I had him over to my house.
Yeah, I love that.
You're right. You know?
Yeah, that's Hank's clue.
Hank is like, he was right under my nose the whole time. I couldn't believe it. Totally different guy.
Yeah.
How could it possibly happen?
That was great. Well,
and then there's the long hold on Hank.
And he's married to my wife's sister.
And Hank's like, and then they got to a commercial.
And then Hank is like, guy under your nose all the time. I think they're really
involved.
Let me put it this way. Yes. I think he was like, I agree with you and Sion, Patrick, that he was on to him with the Dale thing, with the WW and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think he just got blown off the track by Walt Whitman. The guy just said, "Oh, Walt Whitman. Oh, okay." That I think he said, "Silly me, what was I thinking?"
Well, he was thought, jokingly saying
he's been incepted. He has the thought that Walter White is a suspect,
maybe
even if he's dismissed it because of Walt Whitman.
Yeah.
And I think that suspicion is going to start coming up again at the birthday party.
Yeah.
So there's that. Let's see. What else do we have? So we have our first Walt Jr. Eats Breakfast. Walt Jr. loves his breakfast. And
not a particularly dramatic scene.
But no, but he eats breakfast in every season at least a couple of times. And so there you are.
Sure.
What else do I have? We're still looking for the... the previously unseen purple monstrosity in the Schrader household. There has to be a new one. There has to be some new horrible purple thing.
I hadn't noticed that either.
Yeah, notice that the Marie.
Oh yeah, her color's purple.
Oh yeah.
Everything great. It's like, but it's she subtly horrifies you. It's not like she's so over. She's not like, you know, a Muppet or something where she's just gone totally purple on everything to the point of absurdity.
Yeah.
It's right on the edge of absurdity. It's like right at the point.
The couch is purple. The curtain.
Exactly.
Yeah. The curtains are purple. The dishware is purple.
And she stole them.
But like the wallpaper and the paint aren't purple.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the purple is like splattered around.
That's
funny. See what else do we have here? Oh, and we need the first cook, which looks like we're probably going to get next week, and the first pork pie hat. So what do you think they're going to cook?
That's an interesting question. I imagine.
Oh, easy.
What
do you think?
They're going to be cooking at the car wash.
See now,
maybe.
Okay. I have a theory about
that's
that.
A thought.
What do you think, Andrew?
I have no idea. I think Saul is going to find them a warehouse or something.
Yeah.
Or maybe it'll be like, no, you know what would be kind of cool is if they found a way to cook at the public school that Walt used to teach at.
That's a little bold, my friend.
Yeah. Well,
that's like asking for some serious federal heat.
It's closed on weekends.
It's closed on weekends.
Me and Jesse sneak in.
I thought about the car wash, and I think that there's a good likelihood of that one, except for that it's really, really stupid because you own the car wash, and you don't want to be cooking meth on your property.
Yeah,
well,
that's the problem.
Tell that to...
So who do they know who owns a lot of buildings that they might be able to use, who's afraid of them, who they've given a lot of money to,
Beneke,
and who owes them? Beneke.
Oh.
That would be really funny, actually.
Yeah. I think because he's got no other narrative purpose at this point.
That's true.
Well, yeah. But
there's no reason to have him not be dead that I could think of.
Right.
Aside from just showing that Skyler has got some Lady Heisenberg in her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So having him alive and terrified, right?
Yeah.
They could.
We'll see. Yeah, so maybe. I think it could be the car wash, though. I think that's a solid bet. That's a solid.
I was pretty sure that Beneke was just done.
He might be. He might end up just in a warehouse somewhere. It's just a
yeah. It could just be a whole other thing.
Right, but I put it together, I'm like, Beneke.
Yeah, maybe.
Because it's the only way that Walter's gonna be able to square that money that he's never gonna get back, right?
Well, and it's also I think the only way that he can put away his you know feelings towards Beneke. Like there has to be some kind of resolution.
That's what I mean. The only way he could not kill Beneke out of raw vengeance for the money and for Skylar is if Beneke earns the money.
Yeah.
If Beneke earns his keep, then he can at least, because Walt will rationalize all kinds of stuff. Then he'll at least be able to
Walt
say.
Walt lies to himself all the time in order to rationalize
But right now, he's sitting there going, oh, he slept with my wife and he took all my money and blah, blah, blah. And the only way the way that he can assuage that is like, you know, he didn't take my money. I paid him to use his property.
Right.
And so we were business partners. Okay. You know,
that would make sense.
And I'm claiming it with interest now.
Exactly, taking it back with interest, baby.
What might be funny is that they
$100,000 a month.
he has a place that's already being used as a cookhouse, and then they clear it out.
He probably does a grow house. He's probably a pot dealer.
Well, no, I was just thinking. So they clear out the old. They like get the. No. They get Hank to go in and clear out the old drug dealer so they can move in.
You know, who they have to clear out of there is Nancy Botwin. From Weeds, so they're hustling her out the back door while Bill White comes in the front.
Except pot and meth are so different in manufacturing.
Well, no, but just you still need the same facilities.
Eh,
you need a large heat dispersing, chemical dispersing, you know, odor dispersing facility.
Uh-huh.
It's just scrubbers and that kind of thing. So let's see. And then we have Chow, who apparently gets his neckties at the same place that Saul does. This poor guy, you know, like the last time we saw him, he's getting his hand shot.
And
like,
now he's dead. So he's dead. There you go. He didn't make much of an impression.
No,
but
he was like he's like a low level guy. He's like a warehouse manager.
Well, it's sort of the idea, you know.
I guess. Okay, then my favorite scene though is Mike and Gomi and Hank.
Yes. Yeah.
This interrogation.
It's the first time Mike and Hank meet each other. And confront each other.
Yeah.
And they're very good together.
They both play that real well. They're all three cops sitting there.
Well, because they all are just, they're playing the game.
Did it feel weird? It felt weird to me when Gomi steps up with, we can do this the easy way or we can do this the hard way. It's like, who do you think you're talking to? This guy isn't some kid you busted for weed. You know?
Right,
this is Mike. He's not going to fall for the good cop, bad cop routine. Or the smart cop, dumb cop routine.
Yeah, and it's like, even if you did it the hard way, what's the worst you're going to do?
Yeah, arrest me.
Put him in jail. He's going to be dead in 2 years anyway.
Yeah. I'm already dying. You know?
Yeah.
I've got Chekhov's cough. I've been coughing since season two.
And I just got back from a Mexican hospital, so you know how well they patched him up.
I like the whole, we don't kill 11 people for purely prophylactic reasons, but I just poisoned an entire Mexican cartel.
Wow.
And shot my way out of there with a kid who was a junkie 15 minutes ago.
He didn't have any choice.
But I don't do crazy killings. I just, unless Gus is involved. You know. And then what I loved about this was Hank knows what I loved is watching Hank work and knowing that I'm on, you know, Team Mike and everything like that, but watching Hank and knowing he's got something every step of the way and he Columbos him. So like, oh, one more thing about the $2 million
that your granddaughter has.
And then again with Jonathan Banks in the face, they're on him. He's walking out. He's like, and after he says, "I don't know what you mean about," "I don't know what you mean about that." Mm-hmm. Turns around, he gives one of these in the face. He's like, "Oh," just like,
damn,
you know,
he's
like, "Damn it, you got me," and I'm probably gonna have to work with those losers again. You know,
now I need money.
Let's see what else we have. Some screaming
deuce.
I thought that was a siren.
Could be. Oh, it was a siren. Yeah. And then so Mike gets a call from Chow, and Chow's like,
"I need the money.
Oh,
the
I need my money, Mike. You know, can you come to my house?"
Yeah.
Because this isn't a trap.
Yeah. It's like, I have never been invited to anyone's home where it hasn't been a hit attempt.
With Mike, yeah.
Not since my 8th birthday party.
I don't even trust my 10-year-old granddaughter.
Yeah. So, like, he knows. He's like, okay, so you're going to have me killed at your house. Okay.
Yes. So he did. Well, I mean, what's funny about that scene, he distracts the guy at the door with a little pig toy.
He says, I better bring this pig toy.
Well, yeah, he thinks about it. And then he literally gets in the house and stands behind the guy in about 10 seconds. But, I mean, he's supposed to be a badass.
He probably also has keys to Chow's house.
Yeah, maybe.
He probably has keys to the house of everybody he's ever met.
Yeah. You
know. Well, that's his superpower.
Mike is key guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
He can get into anywhere.
He can, you know, just pilfer keys off people, like, with his sausage fingers.
Yeah, exactly.
Make copies and then get them back on the keychain before they know what happened.
I'm very impressed with Huel's dexterity, yeah. You know, given his obvious physical limitations. Yes. So then his guy Chris is there, and it's like, oh, I'm sorry, Mike, I just needed the money. And then,
that was a good scene.
And he's like, are you ready?
What? Just,
but it wasn't a rude one. It wasn't like Mr. Blonde saying, are you done? And I'm going to burn you or whatever. It's like, out of a courtesy, I'm just giving you a moment to prepare before I...
Well, it was more of like, are you ready?
Yeah. Oh, Mike. Yeah.
But no, I mean, there you go again with the full measures, you know?
Yeah,
because he wasn't messing around with him.
Yeah. Right. Didn't mess around. This was taking care of Chris here was a full measure. Chow was taken care of previously. But now he realizes that the full measure here means.
That list has now started to collapse.
That list is starting to collapse. The time pressure's on them. The period of time for ramp up cooking, distributing, and getting cash so that you can secure the rest of your guys is weeks, right? It's not days, it's weeks. And so, this investigation is rapidly unfolding. Evidently, like the DEA guy is out in 2 days. I mean, didn't Gus freaking blow up like last weekend?
Well.
Right? And now they're already throwing people under the bus.
Yeah.
And so I got to believe that in terms of, speaking of half measures, that the idea of cooking up a bunch of meth and selling it so that you have the money to cover your guys is a half measure.
Wow.
Well, you do have Pinkman doing his street slinging. I
mean, yeah, he can make a whole like $3,000 a week doing that. Split three ways, you know, that's a tidy little middle class salary.
Yeah. That'll
pay off a lot of guys. Yeah.
Well, but they're you know, dropping like flies, so.
Mike should just duck low and let them all kill each other, and then.
Well, the thing is, he's got Lydia. He's got the methylamine. I mean, he might be able to get her under control, so they might not be killing each other off because he might have cut that source of cash. But in a situation like that,
do you think he can really trust her though?
Absolutely not.
Possibly.
No, he can't trust her, but she is the only hope he's got to help these two guys get their thing. Right.
I would really see Mike trying to jump the food chain on that one, where he would, you know, try to find out where Lydia gets her supplies.
Yeah, ultimately, sure. He'd want to cut her out.
Yeah, and then once he can cut her out.
But the problem is, methylamine is a controlled substance. The way you get it is that you be a licensed, you know, chemical engineer for a company that gets it for legitimate reasons.
But it's controlled precisely
because it's a precursor to methamphetamine.
Yeah.
Right, and so it was made illegal in the 80s, like in the early 80s to make. But that's why we use pseudoephedrine now.
But if you can get, you know, wherever her supplier is, you know, like a chemical distributor, and then get some guy on the take.
Right. That's the hard part, is that she's the one who's on the take. She's the one who's because her orders are probably legitimate. So finding somebody who's bent, who's bringing you, if there's a bent person getting her methylamine,
well,
then you can cut her out easier, and that might be the case.
You go up the food chain, find out who it is, and then inform them that they've been supplying, you know, a meth lab.
Right.
You're guilty by association. So
here's
your payoff.
She was probably licensed, you know. I mean, I think it's possible. I'm not saying it's not. It also could be that her source of methylamine is some kid. We have no idea where she gets it.
Yeah.
And
we'll see.
For all we know, you know what will be really funny to find out? So methylamine has a couple of legitimate purposes. There's several, actually. It's used as a cleaner, I think, and things like that. And to get a hold of it, it's a big deal. It's a controlled substance. So is the other precursor that they use, but they manufacture that one themselves on the show. And they stole that big drum of it, like in season two or whatever.
Way back when.
And wouldn't it be great if they stole it from Madrigal? That was the Madrigal supply.
That would have been funny.
You know, Because there are not going to be, I guess what I'm saying is there's not going to be that many sources of methylamine in Albuquerque. They probably stole the methylamine that's in Albuquerque, right? And so I got to believe that was Madrigal's. If Gus Fring was in town, you know, this is only a few months ago. He's clearly been doing this for a while.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. It's like, we have you on film.
Don't Maybe
we?
They stole it from Lydia.
So I mean, maybe it's her warehouse. Like she was the one managing it, or Chow, or one of those guys, you know.
Yeah.
So we have Mike and Gomi and Hank. Then we have Mike and Chris, and then we had Mike and Lydia. The last scene. Nice hot place she's got, by the way. Good taste.
Well, that's sort of the point. Is this woman's in over her head
and incredibly fussy.
Yeah, very fussy, but also has very expensive tastes.
Yeah.
And that's why she probably got involved in drugs.
Yeah, I mean, even being an executive at one of those companies doesn't necessarily make you super wealthy.
Right.
You know, because they have a lot of mid-level VPs.
And she's got a daughter and a nanny. We don't know if she has a husband or...
Yeah, we haven't seen a father. Whatever. Almost certainly Mike would have, if there was a man in the picture, he would have dealt with that.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
Well, a lack of a husband would... very much makes sense for why she's looking to get lots of money.
Yeah.
To support that lifestyle.
Yeah.
Right. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the suggestion, is that that's a one income home. Yeah. Right. And so if she's got one income, then it's probably got to be a bigger one than you would have, even if you were a mid-level executive at a food company.
Right.
It's a
really good scene. It's the way that she pleads not for her life, but for her body not to be disposed of.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's like, wait a minute, so you want your 5-year-old daughter to see your bullet-ridden body? He's like, well, yeah, that's better than the alternative.
She's right. It's better than the alternative.
Yeah. I mean, it's horrifying either way. But.
She's saying the daughter has to find her. I don't think the daughter has to find her. I think somebody else. The nanny can find her.
Yeah.
You know, and then the daughter could be given the knowledge but not have to get the shock. You know? Yeah.
But she wants that connection with her
daughter. Arya didn't watch Ned's head get chopped off.
Right. Arya didn't watch. But no one is saying, but she saw his dead head later on.
Yeah. But you're not getting that shock. Like, you know what happened.
I would totally want to see that, though. If it's going to happen anyway.
You're a sadist.
Well, why not see it? Because you're just going to be imagining it for the rest of your life. If you see it, then you've seen it. And know that you've seen the real thing. You're not wondering how it went down.
Either. For the exact same reason why people say the books are always better than the movies.
Because
your imagination is better than actually.
Right, but you enjoy books and movies. And so like when you read a book, you want your imagination to take you on a joyride. I'm telling you, you probably don't want that when you're imagining the decapitation of your parents. you want a solid bad movie to be made out of that story that you can just forget about it.
And now the interesting thing is...
I think I would prefer to... You prefer not the book? Watch that. I think I prefer the book on that.
Yeah, you're right.
Do you think when she's pleading with him, do you think she knows that this is the best way to get him to stop?
No, but it is. He's clearly got a soft spot for
he's got a 10-year-old
children,
granddaughter,
for
his
female children or just children. He's got Hungry Hungry Hippos. That was the thing I missed. I was like trying to remember something. The Hungry Hungry Hippos.
Yeah, that was funny. Him playing
Mike the Cleaner playing Hungry Hungry Hippos with his granddaughter. That's to me is like, this is his vulnerability. It's his daughter's.
Right.
And I think she gave him pause based on that pleading.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if he didn't, because he's like, and he's got this thing. He did the same thing with Jesse. He's like, oh, Jesse. He's got a soft, Mike has a soft spot.
Right, yeah.
For people he feels he has a paternal relationship to. Like, he feels like a father figure to Jesse. He feels like, you know, or a grandfather figure. So I think, I think she softened his heart with that pleading. But I then think that the real reason he didn't do it is because he realized that she could get him the money he needs.
Yeah, there's certainly that.
Yeah. Hmm. I would have asked her for gobs of cash. Is there a way you could get gobs of cash?
That artwork on the wall looked really valuable.
Yeah, it's like, well, not enough. Maybe not enough to keep your people quiet, but how about we gut your life and squeeze you for every dollar we get? That's probably worth $2-3 million at least.
If you sell the
five
house.
Or six,
right
you sell the
there.
House and everything else. It's a down market, but, you know, she might have taken a loss on the house. But, yeah.
And she... You know,
she
supplies him with paying off some of his guys.
I got to believe that if you bust her out mafia style, that you can get enough money out of that to cover your guys, at least temporarily. You could say, look, I owe you $1 million, but I can get you $100,000 right now. Mm. Right. And there's $900,000 coming once Pinkman and the Brain get it together. You know, but he needs some operating capital very quickly. I would have had her provide that as well. So then he calls Walter up, and Walter's like washing the dishes.
Yeah. Yes, that was so funny.
Yeah. And
he even washes the dishes menacingly.
And is it just me, or is there now absolutely no direct lighting in Albuquerque?
Yeah. I think
everything is a sconce.
Maybe.
The sun has hidden
itself. The sun is hidden. It's all shadows and sconces.
It's never sunny in New Mexico.
It's never sunny in New Mexico.
Well, yeah, because Philadelphia stole it.
But that's why, they've always been very good with the lighting. But I really think that there's something to bringing the Germans in, and then suddenly we like turn the Fritz Lang temperature like way up. And we've gone from these like 2 and 3 layer lighting scenarios to these 6 and 7 layer lighting scenarios. I think they're trying to show off for the Germans.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
A little bit. But I mean, that's also getting to being I'm kind of collecting my idea here.
Sure.
It guides the viewer to what they want them to think of Walt.
Yes. Okay. The light is expressionistic of Walt's personality.
Take whatever the hell I said and make it smart.
They're using
layers of darkness.
They're using layers of darkness and light as an expressionistic way of revealing Walter's soul.
And how deep he is.
And also the duality, darkness. The duality in his life as well as other people, including Jesse.
Right.
Everybody's shown in this, especially in this episode, very much half in and half out of the light. Half their faces are lit. Mm. Like the side of Jesse's face and his torso is lit, but his head is dark. Heads are cut off, you know, or cut out of the light. It was kind of creepy when, I didn't note this one, when Skyler's depressed, right, and Walter's trying to wake her up. He's like, come on, why don't you get up? Shower will feel good. And it's like, you know, or I'll hit you. that felt menacing. That felt like That felt like some Michael Corleone stuff. Like, you know, come on, Kay.
That was basically what I was getting at there.
Yeah.
The only time he isn't menacing now is when he's with his baby daughter. That's really, and our son.
Oh yeah, and we were noticing this too. It's like, this is the lowest maintenance baby ever there has been. I know plenty of people who've had babies.
They're usually working harder than Skyler and.
Well, Andrew, you're the expert. You've worked with children yes. at around the age of 2. It's not a baby.
Yeah, right.
This baby is like 8 months old.
Yeah.
More attention, some toys, some interaction with members of the family.
See, yeah,
it's like this baby's always over in the corner.
This is a problem if you have a mother who's depressed and a father who works hard and isn't home
and
much.
And is a meth cooker.
This is not a good formula for a baby.
No.
I'm saying.
I would generally say yeah. I think if the child services had something to say.
Surely if Child Protective Services gets involved here, the baby's leaving the house.
I think they'd really say this baby is not in a good situation.
Yeah, this would be a fairly extreme
situation. But perhaps Skylar is taking the baby with her to the car wash and Googling
be.
Over her while...
Yeah, we had this discussion with Sienna while we were watching.
The car wash.
And yeah. The baby really bothers her, and I kind of agree. I think it's like this. I think the baby is the weakest part of the show right now because it feels like it was introduced to give Walter some financial pressure in the first few episodes.
Right.
And then also Skylar some psychological stuff because she has that great monologue to Hank. It's like, I'm nearly 40 years old. I'm accidentally pregnant. And my sister needs attention. That was one of my favorite monologues in the series.
Yeah.
So her pregnancy and the imminent baby were very useful in the early part of the show to put you on kind of on Walt's side and to give him a reason to be doing this.
Right.
Well, once the baby's been born, the chaos has been too much for them to pay attention to the baby. But I don't want them to pay attention to the baby.
Yeah,
I don't want a lot of baby stuff.
You know, maybe they should just hire a nanny and, you know,
yeah, sure.
The
hire a nanny who can overhear all of the cell phone conversations.
Oh, well,
and all the random...
you know. Okay, you hire a nanny who doesn't speak English very well.
Or at all.
And so that way, you know, you just point and grunt and here's your money and take care of the baby and yeah, the baby's fine.
Well, because at some point then you know Walt would have sex with the maid.
Oh, well.
I mean,
that's one thing he hasn't been able to do.
Does.
Well,
yeah,
he came on to somebody, but he struck out. You know, he's not. I think he's going to start leching. I do think that that's where he's going. I think it's going to be a transformation for him.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But I don't think so. I think he seems almost asexual, except for that one time where he hit on that woman.
And that's when he found out. That's right after he found out Skylar was cheating on him.
Right.
Yeah. Although cheating is a odd
term. In many ways, he feels asexual. It's almost like he's getting off on being this drug dealer so much.
Well, no, he was sexual with Skylar.
Yeah,
he's very sexual with Skylar early on.
Yeah,
but I'm talking about
he's even now giving her creepy,
seems asexual. Yes,
yeah, he's giving her creepy back massages. Yeah. I mean that's trying to get laid.
That's true.
Although that's strange because they had sex in the car in the Aztec.
Yeah. Right.
Which I don't think is possible.
They have sex about once a season.
Yeah, and then he came onto her very strongly before, and she had to like no means know him.
Right.
Right. When he was feeling kind of when he came back from his fugue state or whatever it was, he got all excited.
Yeah.
And so he's not asexual. I think he's got an underlying sexual thing going on, but I think he has shifted from in those cases he really wanted sex and intimacy. Here he's being a slime. He wants to use sex to get
power. So power over her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really slimy.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah.
Because he wants her on his side. Right. So.
Well, she's stuck on his side.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
he wants her.
He wants her to love him. Or at least
accept him.
He wants her to want to be on his side.
Yeah.
And to admire him and to be proud of him for what he's done and to, you know, he wants to
give him respect for.
He wants all this male validation.
Yeah.
You know, and he does doing everything he can to not get it.
Other than providing hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars.
All right. So we were talking before about overall impressions. And so now that we've gone through the recap, we can go around because we do have some controversy here. For me, I'm putting this, I don't know about top five, but it's top 10 for me, episodes.
All time?
Mm-hmm.
You're crazy.
Okay, so here we go. This is where I'm So I'm putting ahead of this one, I'm putting Bug, Crawl Space, Face Off, and Shotgun. Those are the four episodes that I would say I like better than this one. Mm. But I don't know if it's like infinitely better than all the others, but it's like I would make that this one like the fifth in that list.
You know, I'd say it was pretty darn good.
Yeah. You have a different take. You feel like it was... So you said it was like a vehicle piece.
Yeah.
It felt like.
I.
So does that degrade the value of the execution?
No. It doesn't It doesn't mean that it's not a well-made episode.
Right.
But I just feel like story-wise, it didn't accomplish...
It's not Blackwater.
...much. Yeah. It didn't... You know, it's kind of like... I want to see the next episode. Because if the next episode, you know,
which is called Hazard Pay, by the way.
Hazard Pay. Okay. Yes. That is my one curse is I can never remember the name of specific episodes for anything.
Yeah,
so it's not just this. So when you went through that list of names just now, it's just like, okay,
well,
but
you didn't know what I was
like
talking
this
about
one, this one, that
wrong.
One, and that one. I have no idea which episodes you were just
Bug,
talking about.
Bug, I remember.
But you know I was wrong.
Everybody knows Bug.
I don't know
Bug
what you were talking about,
off.
But you knew I was wrong. Well, Crawl Space is the one where he ends laughing at the Joker laugh at the end.
That was good.
Remember? He's down in the... He's got to get the money to disappear himself, and he doesn't have enough.
Yeah.
And he's like, Skylar, what happened to the rest of the money? He's like, I gave it to Ted.
Yes,
that was a good one.
Was that wrong? I should not have told you where the money is.
Yeah, that was a mistake.
Don't tell Skylar where the money physically is.
Well, Skylar's the one that hid it.
Don't let Skylar hide the money. Let Saul hide the money.
Yeah.
I need to rewatch the show. I've forgotten a lot of the early episodes.
Right. So,
now that you're talking about them, I'm like, oh yeah,
so,
that was really good.
Yeah, so you feel like it's less of a satisfying piece of story because it doesn't have a conclusion that is me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of
not
a build
not
up
even
or
that, but it's just there's nothing that. I mean, I don't want to use gets resolved. That,
right.
I mean, because that would not be entirely the best.
Right.
But you know, like this is more of like we're gonna raise questions episode. We're gonna kind of
set
here's magical.
Up.
Yeah, yeah.
We're
yeah.
gonna show you magical. We're not really gonna explain everything, but you know, you kind of you get it's the get your bearings for the season episode.
I agree.
It's
I
not,
agree that it has that.
It's not like we're gonna be doing anything groundbreaking here, but. I do enjoy the fact that I think the artistic design was superior. Mm. I do.
It was a great looking episode. Yeah,
yeah. I think it was probably one of the. It's in my top five of best looking episodes.
Okay, good. There you go.
So, I think what would be really important is the next episode, you know, like the next 1, 2, 3 episodes.
Right.
And see how those get put together to kind of make this one pay off.
Right. It's kind of like, and I think when you mentioned like Quantum of Solace.
Like, I'm really waiting for
Skyfall.
Skyfall.
Right, right. Like, although Quantum of Solace is not supposed to be related to Skyfall now.
Well, whatever.
Well, originally I'd heard there was going to be 3 movies, and I've always been like, Quantum of Solace might not have sucked if the next movie's any good.
That's, yeah.
You know, if this pays off and goes somewhere, retrospectively, it might be a good film.
Well, and exactly like with episode 2 of Star Wars.
Which didn't like, pay off.
It was absolute garbage when I first saw it in the theaters.
Right.
But then when I saw
the context.
Revenge of the Sith, and then I was like,
oh, this fits
okay,
in. So it does
now
fit
I see
in a
how it
bit.
Fits
yeah,
together.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Like, okay, now it's a good piece. Now that I kind of got the entire
yes.
scope.
I think I agree in saying that if this doesn't pay off the things it sets up, then it retroactively.
Well,
it's
kind
of
going
to
have to.
But it has to. But I'm assuming it has to.
It has to. It has to do that well.
There's no way there's going to be, you know, the remaining 14 episodes are going to be, hey, let's just run the car wash.
No, hey, there's an idea. Let's just be car wash people.
Well, but I mean, they could do the next, you know, episode or 2 episodes and, you know, set up a whole bunch of other stuff and that
right.
stuff gets paid off.
So
a lot
yeah,
of this
I think
kind of gets left behind a little bit or just not answered
yeah.
in the entirety that I have come to expect from the
But
show.
Breaking Bad is such a switch watch. It's like everything gets connected so well. Although sometimes things don't pay off. Like, for example, you know, I think we had some disagreement on this. I just don't like the airplane crash.
That was brilliant.
Yes,
yeah,
I thought it was bullshit because you are cold opening me on an eyeball gunned down at the, and it really looks like there's going to be this big fight at the White household. Then it turns out to be a plane crash, so it's a red herring.
Yeah.
Right, and then it does, which I don't mind. I don't mind the red herring if you know that's cool with me. But then this airline crash would still be a major story on everyone's lips right now in the timeline.
Well,
it's huge. It's a major event. It's like 9/11 level event Albuquerque.
But okay, but here's the thing though. Yeah. In the 24-hour news cycle that is Albuquerque, we just had an old folks home explode.
Yeah.
That too. That the old folks home would get the headline. Absolutely. But my point being that inside of the story, we haven't had the airline story play out, even though the father is still alive. Right, it really felt like it was a dropped line.
I don't know. I mean, you still see like the Saul Goodman commercials for, has your family been damaged by an airplane accident?
There's lots of little stuff, but I just mean like we've been talking for like 2 or 3 seasons now about like at some point Jesse's going to find out about Jane, and we haven't advanced. And I feel like I want to see that advance. I want to see Q come back, and B having putting some together and get something on how Jane died. That doesn't immediately point to Walter for him. There's no reason he would even suspect Walter White or whatever.
The guy I met at
but
the bar.
But he figures out some detail about Jane's life that leads Jesse to believe that Walt might have been there for her death.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I don't think that's going to happen now. But for years, we've been like, oh, yeah, I can hardly wait for the Jane thing.
So there's the question. Is Jesse going to figure out that Walt killed his girlfriend or that he poisoned a child?
Didn't
his other girlfriend's child.
Yeah, yes. Didn't kill her. Let her die.
Let her die.
No, killed her because he kicked her over. He moved her body initially. He did. She was lying on her side like a proper junkie, and if she would have puked, she would have puked out on the side of the bed. When he got in there, he jostled the bed, and she rolled onto her back. So his remove Walter White from the room.
Indirectly.
Remove Walter White from the room, and she lives.
Okay, but the point is this massive...
But he didn't
the actively kill her. Okay, the ultimate... point of flat 747 down over ABQ
right.
is that the entire season is the story of how Walter White made that happen
right
through all
right.
of his small
indirectly
actions
totally
and
get
he
that.
Creates an explosion over
I totally get that and I like that part of the story
that's fantastic
that
to
is
me.
That's not
fantastic
to me that's not fantastic it's nice but what I feel is that just having that explosion, it's like the baby. Having that explosion happen because it's a great way to tell that part of the story and then letting it drop is like having a baby because you want to have a big pregnancy drama for the first part of the show and then you do absolutely nothing that relates to baby care at any other point for the next 4 years. Yeah. Right? So it feels to me like the baby is a dropped line, even though it makes perfect sense narratively to have Skyler be pregnant. And to me, the airline crash is a dropped line, even though, yes, obviously it's about the unintended consequences of a million little choices that lead to Walter White killed hundreds of people.
Yes.
He took an action that ended up resulting in the deaths of hundreds of people. And I think that the indication that they weren't going to go anywhere with it was when he was in the gym. Right. And he was given that speech. I was like, oh, come on. It wasn't even the biggest airline crash, you know, of the last 10 years. And, you know, really, 1,000 people die in this country every day. And, you know, it's all kinds of things that happen that are strange. You know, who's to say who's responsible? Let's just forget about it and move on.
Right.
And when he said that, let's just forget about it and move on, that was my signal. It's like, you're not going to do anything else with this.
Yeah.
Well, right. Okay. You know, and so it's like, to me, it was not, I wasn't as satisfied. I felt like...
I'm okay with it. Watching a bunch of people mourning a plane crash is not...
No, not about mourning a plane crash. It's more like, because they left the thread, the Jane, discovering what happened to Jane thread.
Yeah.
Pursued, it feels like this constant itch in that story for me is like, when is Jesse going to find out about Jane? And now it seems very unlikely that he will.
And Walter almost told him.
And during Bug,
that was a great moment.
Yeah.
Well, I thought he did, but Jesse just didn't get it.
It's kind of hard to
say. He did. He confessed, but Jesse didn't understand the context of what he was talking about.
Right.
I forget the line, but it was basically, it was he close. Didn't say, I let Jane die.
Yeah. Yep.
He's
like, I'm sorry for the things.
He said, I've done things to hurt you or something vague like that.
Right.
Know, that, you know, and Jesse didn't get it.
I heard an
interview
with Vince Gilligan, and originally Walter was actually going to inject heroin in her to give her an overdose. And that was the only time that when he showed the network the script, they said, okay, that's a little too dark.
Yeah.
And so he went
Can you pull back from that?
Yeah. Because then that's pretty out there.
That's a little, I mean, actually, I think that's the case where I think the network suits got it right, because it's not that it's too dark for TV in general. I think it's too dark for Walter to be, because that scene is already like, he crossed that. That's the one he crosses a line.
Yes.
That's when he tips over from, I'm still kind of good to, now I'm
just
kind of bad.
Yeah, yeah. Now I'm intentionally letting people die who don't need to be dead, you know, who are not poorly motivated, you know.
And blowing up airplanes.
Right. And I also think that it was a tipping point for Jesse, because Jane was the first point where he showed any mature vulnerability.
Right.
Everything else was he's this little defensive rooster up to this point with her, and he was like genuinely in love with her. Mm-hmm. You know. I think I agree with the assessment of this episode being a vehicle episode. I think the reason I put it in top fives is because there are vehicle episodes and then there are vehicle episodes. And I feel like this, what I liked about this is that they've been talking about Madrigal for like a year and a half now. Right, they've been saying, "What is this Madrigal thing? What's this Madrigal thing?" Mm-hmm. You know, and so to even get as far as seeing inside their headquarters and having a couple of characters associated with it feels like getting inside the Batcave a little bit, right? It feels like that first Batcave shot. You're like,
and all they do is make high fructose corn syrup sauces,
dipping sauces, and methamphetamine.
And, yeah, that's all they do.
Which is interesting because meth takes away your appetite. So, but. You know, the guy gets to get you.
Well, they use it as a distribution network.
And the other thing was like Hank and Mike and Gomi, right? Mm. It's like, here are the cops. Here are the cops, two cops, interviewing another cop. How do you play a cop? How do you, you know, and seeing Hank work it. Again, this crossing of lines, having Hank actually have a hold of some element of the Fring operation that is not, you know, Tio Salamanca fucking with his head or something like that, where he's actually on the solid trail.
Right.
And not like playing with his minerals. Right. So even though he doesn't get very far with it, he just all he does is put the bug in Mike's head that his money's gonna be gone. It felt like it's a little bit like, for me, it's more like Dark Knight than like Attack of the Clones.
Mm.
Dark Knight continues a story that was rolling at the end of Batman Begins, and it concludes ambiguously, and it's not done, right? Yeah. Nothing gets resolved except for the Joker's dead, right?
And now we hate Batman.
And now Batman's a bad guy, right? Yeah, okay. And he's manufacturing artificial villains out of himself just to keep the city safe, which doesn't make no sense. Like, this is crazy. And then you say, yeah, well, you guys invaded Iraq. And so it's like, okay, point well taken. But so this feels more like Dark Knight, where it's like, yeah, it's an intermediate or Empire Strikes Back, you know, where yeah, this is an intermediate story. It starts off at the middle of the story. It ends in the middle of the story. We don't resolve everything. But Empire Strikes Back is my favorite Star Wars movie.
I think that's a lot of people's favorite.
That's a lot of people's. I think it was the best. It's clearly the best executed one, but I also love the story in that one more than any of the others.
And you know, to take
because, but it's a vehicle movie. It's not. Mm-hmm. It doesn't finish the story.
To take that point further, in the Lord of the Rings films, I thought the second
one, Two Towers, was is the best one. Yeah,
and in fact, in most movie scripts, the second
act is the best.
Is usually the best.
Yeah,
it's usually in the third act
because when, the first acts tend to be perfunctory, and third acts tend to be you know, unsatisfying.
Right. Yeah, it's because that second act is like you've met all the characters, you've got this situation.
Well,
so it's sort of the meat.
Yeah,
kind of. You've met your principal characters.
You met
already.
Your principal characters.
But now that you've already set up their motivations, now what it really relies on is your supporting characters kind of playing off them.
Yeah.
And if you can't get that right, then you're screwed.
Right.
Oh, that's true.
And because, I mean, like in The Dark Knight, you know, you can't explain Batman again. You've already explained Batman.
Yeah. We already know Batman.
Yeah, we get Batman. He fights crime. He wants to save the city. But now we need a villain that's actually going to make things dangerous for saving the city.
Right.
And we get the Joker.
Right. But you also have Harvey Dent saying, as you know, like, Batman can't be Batman forever, and if you're the hero long enough, you become the villain. And I think Harvey Dent spoke for Christopher Nolan in that film. And Christopher Nolan is saying very explicitly what he also said in Memento, which is that if you craft a heroic narrative for yourself, villains will show up. He's very build it and they will come. If you build your life so that you're a hero, you're either going to become a villain or you're going to attract villains. That's where villains come from, you know. And so but to the point of like vehicle stuff in Dark Knight, I haven't seen the new movie yet, by the way, but everyone's saying you have to see the other. You were disappointed or happy with it?
I wanted to talk to you about it after this.
Oh. Haven't seen it yet. I'm catching it this weekend. We'll talk about it next week.
Okay.
But from what I understand of it, you know, it's setting up to resolve that question. That question doesn't really get answered in Dark Knight. So you have...
Which question?
The question of, like, is Batman going to die the hero or live to become the villain? It's not really answered. That's the theme of the whole movie, is like, how is Batman going to continue doing this crazy thing he's doing if supervillains are taking over the city? I mean, it's not working, right? And I think that we're seeing that too in this what I agree is a vehicle episode. Is there are coming out of this, I have so many ways that, like, coming out of last week's episode, I didn't see a ton of ways that things were going to explode. I knew they were going to. I knew we would get some stuff, but I didn't see where the plot was going to take us so that Walter White was going to end up burning down the lives around him again. Now I do. Now I see the mechanisms that are going to grind him up in the next few episodes anyway. You know.
Well, the next six.
And I think that's what makes it my favorite episode for a while. So,
again, I want to... the problem is, like, without knowing the next episodes, it's really hard for me to like
this one. Yeah, I can tell you. It's like, retrospective.
Yeah, sure, like, sure. When I finish this, you know, season or this half season.
This half season.
They're going to sell two DVD packages. They might as well call it two seasons.
They want to get two bites of the Emmy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, they only had so many episodes of story left. So.
Right. And they didn't want to run 16. 16 is a long run, and it's probably pretty fast. So.
Well, and doing...
I'm not too upset by two shorts. I like it.
Whatever works.
Yeah.
But you're saying, essentially, retrospectively, this might turn out to be a great episode if it fits well into a nice puzzle piece that comes up. But on its own, it can't really be judged, actually. It sucks on its own? Well, every Breaking Bad episode sucks on its own.
No.
Because...
Bug. Not the pilot.
Except for the pilot. Yeah.
Bug,
okay. Bug can be taken on its own. Yeah. There's a couple that can be kind of taken on their own, but the best episodes all lock together, you know, and depend on so much that has happened. I mean, it's... I'm admiring shows that do this series-long arc thing, even like Sons of Anarchy, which is a much less complicated show, but it has a whole lot more characters. Yeah. So the plot is simpler, but it's more Game of Thrones-y in terms of the number of people you have to follow. That they just... I just admire the writing of these guys that just keep a season-long story going like this, you know? So... But
there are some very smart people who write this show.
I guess my last defense of the episode is... it makes me want to see the next episode.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm not now disinterested in like what's going to happen. How is this going
to
play out?
If the quality level this isn't Lost.
If you come this far, you're going all the way to the end.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, it's because the payoff will not be the kind of payoff they had in Lost. It will make sense.
Hopefully.
I don't know. Lost. They could... You never know. Like, Vince Gilligan could lose his mind the last 8 episodes, and it just sucks.
If Bryan Cranston wakes up from a dream in the last episode, that would suck.
That would
suck. But I seriously don't think it would. Oh, wow. I dreamed I was a myth. I have back to class.
Any writers listening to this, never, ever, ever use that element.
It was just a dream.
No, that is the most unsatisfying ending.
It only works in The Wizard of Oz.
It worked in Jacob's Ladder. Spoiler alert.
I didn't like that in Jacob's Ladder.
It's stupid.
Yeah, okay, but that's fine. But that doesn't ruin Jacob's Ladder. Jacob's Ladder, the entire...
It did for me.
The entire point is that he's dead.
It did for
me. It's the entire point.
So what's the point of the movie? I don't care.
That you're supposed to let go of your holding... That the process of going through hell is holding onto your life while you're dying. And that you have to let go
but at some point
and accept. It's about acceptance.
I didn't like that.
But the thing is...
All a dream.
It's not that it's all a dream. It's that he's dead. And so it doesn't mean he's dreaming. It could really be the afterlife. It could be memories. It could be all kinds of things, you know. Let me put it this way. It wasn't a cop-out in Jacob's Ladder. It was the point. He didn't set up a bunch of stuff that can only be explained by a dream.
So what you're saying is it's not that season of Dallas that was
exactly. It's not like, oh my God, I've painted myself into a corner. Whatever am I going to do with Tim Robbins? I guess I'll just make him dead.
Yeah.
It's not a cop out. The idea from the beginning is what is it like to die is what he's writing about.
Fair enough.
Anyway, any further commentary?
It's a good show.
Thank you for joining us. And we miss our lovely co-hostess who's buzzing about and taking care of her business. And we'll be back next week for Hazard Pay. Yeah. Looking forward to Hazard Pay. And then the episode after that is 51. I think 51 is probably going to be my favorite of the four.
They should take a little trip out to north of Vegas.
Yeah. No, they should go out to Four Corners and smash Walter's head on Four Corners. So until then, join us next week, and we will see you at the movies, I guess.
Thank you.